Call for the weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and listen to the live stream at that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your carry-around devices, your iPhone, your iPad, your desktop, your laptop, tablet. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon to listen to the live stream, and you can even stream it into your car. It's time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button for me. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media, the homepage is there. It should be one of your favorites. If not, put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. The page is going to be revamped very shortly with new programs, new content, blogs and podcasts of the different programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, no guests are scheduled. Well, we do have special guests, and that's you, the listening audience. We're in open forum this evening. Anything on your mind, you can give us a call. The floor is yours. And that contact number to get involved in the conversation, again, is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not where you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Orange Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing there, Brother Elliot?
How are you feeling, sir?
I'm doing good today. I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to hearing what the callers, guests have for us today as far as this open forum. So I'm interested in sharing and learning as usual.
Yeah, well, usually when we don't have, invited guests, authors, or historians, or sometimes columnists or professors, we usually go back to some of our favorites, which is the listening audience, and have the open forums, which I really love, because you hear different various opinions, different stories come up, either stories from their localities or their opinions on national stories, which is always good. I like the conversation, with the listening audience. One thing I've been meaning to ask you, because I usually get updates on some of the events going on at the UNI headquarters here, centering around some of the meetings. Any new developments going on that you want to share?
Well, you know, they had the celebration for African leaders this weekend in Philadelphia, where they made a connection with the UNIA. Matter of fact, had the President General speaking in the city today. I think that was Friday, all day celebration, and with the Jamaica Association. So that was a big activity that I was aware of that's going on. Other things that still that I'm aware of, they're still pushing. You know, Philadelphia is the place where the international headquarters is. There's two divisions in Philadelphia, formal divisions, Division 178 and Division 121, and 121 being the oldest division here, and it's the place where the international headquarters is located. So the renovation of the building and which is sitting in the heart of now, we were talking about gentrification, Temple's expansion on Cecil B. Moore Avenue. But the process seems to, all reports I hear, going well in relationship to that activity. And I think it's important to let, you know, especially those who Mr. Garvey said there's two types of Garveyites, the card-carrying members, but everybody is a member of the UNIA. And that the activity of assisting in developing, moving that building, as I always say, towards the 22nd century would require all of us, so that to give whatever kind of contribution, information, skills or financial resources. So that's another thing that's going on. And that the international officers, parent body officers, are deliberately focused, involved in, and the local membership in both of the divisions, 178 and 121. So those are the things I've heard so far going on at the hall.
Richard, one question, because I know the Philadelphia chapter is active. I know that New York is very active. In a lot of the major cities around, which ones have the active chapters?
Well, New York, Philadelphia, I've heard Baltimore.
Okay.
Florida is a chapter. Florida, D.C., and I think that's the expanse. I know it's it might be somewhere in Louisiana or Texas, but I'm not sure. I'm not up on that information as well as I should be. But those I know, those five I know for sure. Boston, Chicago are other two areas that come to mind.
Nothing on the West Coast that comes to mind?
It may be, but it doesn't come to mind.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about the need for our people to become active in grassroots organizations that have a track record and dealing directly with the pulse of the communities. And, you know, if you don't have active chapters such as UNIA or others in your cities, then it's incumbent for our people to start them. It's been high time. But, you know, for some of our people that have been asleep or in slumber, or the times we're living in now, it's really incumbent for our people to wake up. You know, cold water to be thrown on your face or cold rag or something. You know, you got to get active. You know, when we had Sister Paula Peoples on Friday night, and she mentioned that it's necessary in a lot of these cities because she, being an activist in the Philadelphia area for a number of years, I mean, she didn't need any prompting from us. She told the listening audience that the local listening audience that didn't know, and our national listening audience, the problem encapsulated with leadership, because black leadership is supposed to be a model here in Philadelphia, because all of the major offices was held at one time until this mayor turned over, was held by black people. All of your major supposed to be command positions. And it was still a failure, an utter failure of leadership here. So it's something wrong. Black faces on white power is not the answer. And it's been clear to us, but some of our people usually in the past have been excited when they see black faces take some of these positions, like the president for the past 8 years before we got the 45 in there. People was excited when they see black faces in some of these offices. But then after the years go by and then they look back and reflect, they see that nothing's changed, and then they kind of scratch their head and then start blaming themselves. Oh, you didn't go out and vote. Oh, you didn't say anything. You had an opportunity to speak out and things of that nature. Especially black politicians, after they fail the community, they throw it right back in the community's face like it's their fault. When they're in these positions, they know exactly what's going on. They see it because the community is not in those meetings, and sometimes those politicians are not in those meetings where decisions is made. All they do is react. But they have access to a lot of those meetings that the public is not privy to. So they see what's going on. They see where the dollars is pushed to. They see where the money is allocated. They can change the direction of some of that money. I ain't saying they can do all of it and work miracles, but they can change the direction of some of that money to go straight to helping their communities. And what they can't change, they can pull the cover off of some of these people. That's one thing that some of these black politicians don't do. If they can't change something, they can at least be a man that blows the whistle, similar to what the brother did at Watergate when he seen that door open. He blew the whistle. So, you know, if folks can't do something and they claim their hands is tied, then be a whistleblower. pull the cover off of some of these white folks and white organizations that are stealing money, funneling money, double-crossing the community, making plans for gentrification, and the community don't know what's going on until they see people working construction in their neighborhoods. You know, it's things that can be done instead of just collecting money and sometimes getting nailed for corruption and all that type of foolishness going on with some of these politicians. You know, she raised the issue too, Richard, of conducting people's campaigns in some of these localities. See, a lot of these national offices, we're not making a dent there. You know, they figured it was a victory having Obama in. In retrospect, that wasn't any victory for black folks. It just kind of stymied some activity for some of our people that we could have been doing for 8 years. But, you know, in these localities, where, especially in these cities, where some of this money is being used in other areas, we can, like Paula People said, start running people's campaigns, not based on any Democrat or Republican parties, but people's campaigns, especially with some of these younger groups that's already active in cities. At the Locks Conference, we talked to some of the young sisters and brothers that were involved with the RBG activities here in Philadelphia, and it's very big in certain areas of the city. It's very easy for them to turn around and conduct people's campaigns in certain areas and take some of these seats of power, council positions, and state representative positions from some of these clowns if they conduct a people's campaign, because they already got a street force. These other Democrat blacks that's in these cities, they depend on the Democratic Party to give them money, walk around money, and so they can pay off ward leaders and pay people to hand out flyers in the neighborhood and all that type of stuff. But some of these young people, Richard, they already have the street force. They already have people that almost volunteer to do stuff. They're doing it now. When they go out there and hand out food, hand out coats to homeless people, hand out literature at 52nd and Market and other places where they set up, they're doing it already. You know what I mean, Richard? They're doing it already.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the mobilization and organizational process by this generation, whether by RBG and other groups, those who were in Black Lives Matter, the potential is there. And, I'm glad you brought that up, Elliot, because it gives me a chance to again reemphasize, as I see and look for feedback from others, because, I said the other day, that along with that, we need to make sure, especially when we're talking about a national thing, and I'm coming out of my own understanding, that because we need to have study groups, and those study groups need to be focusing on the history of African people in general, so that we're clear of why we're doing this. And then, two, the history of the particular locale specifically. Because when we start dealing with this, especially when you're talking about the machine politics, Elliot, you use that black face on white power. I'm totally in opposition from the perspective of going in absence of have a machine of black faces on black power. I have no challenge with us sending people to these elected positions, because we know that machine that they go into is that to get those resources so that our communities, our people can be able to benefit from them while we're here. But when we are looking for individuals and they go just out of their own personal calling, or even I look at groups out of their own personal calling, but not necessarily came out of a process, not just a coalition, a governing process saying, you're going here to get this, because that's the mechanism that we're evaluating you on while you're there. And if you don't do that, like you say, pulling the cover out to let us know why you can't get it, or if you're going down another path, or you're making any side negotiations, then you'll know that we're going to pull you out of there, because we have that people who are quote unquote loyal to the people in the area that they live in. and the area they live in, whether that be their district area or their city area or their state area or our national area or even our international area. And you hear me kind of growing this out because, Elliot, we have to be more interconnected in order to have true power. Because the power issue is, when you're saying things, you know, now it seems to be there's a lot of competing interests. And the question comes where we as African-Americans, Africans in America are really taking hold, especially, and I'm going to interject this and leave it alone, when there's a new doctrine called America First coming into play. I mean, it's more visible. It's always been, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, 45 is saying, you know, in spite of everybody else, even their loyal alliance, you know, America is going to be the supreme military power on the planet right now. And it's going to get its way in the name of protecting its interests. The question, as we had said before, well, where do we, as African people in this, especially in North America, where do we sit in this? How do we benefit from this? Or how are we going to be, what's that, held responsible for some irresponsible acts? And let's use, you know, in my closing on this thought, let's use the brother who got killed in Niger. You know, what is American foreign policy doing when we're talking about AFCOM in Africa? What's its intent? And where do we agree with it as American Africans? Do we agree with it? And if we don't, well, what are we agreeing to? And how is that benefiting us in our going back to those localities, going back to those cities, those states, and to this to the African people nationally? How does that benefit this American First? Because we know the history has been, it doesn't benefit us to the large majority of us. So it's you know, when we the study groups being able to have our own governing mechanism, our own power matrix or nexus, and then putting candidates, young candidates in those positions with policies in hand, with plans in hand, that we can now evaluate them. Because that was one thing Sister People said about the scorecard, right? Mm-hmm. We can be able to evaluate them whether you actually, but if we don't know what you're there to do, how can we evaluate whether you're doing it or not? So I agree with you wholeheartedly.
You know, the it's a couple of clips here that I want to play for the listening audience. Shoot, I did have those things. Now I can't seem to find them. In reference to oh boy, let me try. You know what? I'll probably find them during a break. But what I'll do right now, I'll take a call or two, get some of the listeners involved. Because, Richard, I want to come back to something you said earlier, and maybe we'll do it in the next half hour, when you was talking about, because we always talk about think tanks in these cities. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that this program serves as a think tank. Using an historical perspective on our situation. And, you know, some of our people, because I talk with people a lot, especially in the business I'm in, and they don't see where history is important. Mm. But you have to use an historical perspective on our situation, or you won't know which way to turn necessarily. I mean, that piece I played by John Henry Clark at the beginning of the program, when he states that history is a clock that tells people their cultural time of day. I mean, all of that, all that whole scenario that he states in that 2.5 minutes or 2 minutes that he states puts it clearly. We have to look at a historical perspective, and especially our situation dealing with this man, this European, since we've been here and exposed to him in this country, because that gives us a blueprint on what we need to do to move our people out, to unlock these chains.
And that, you know, Bobby Clark raised that that understanding that history is a tool, and something you say at other times about we have to look at this from a military perspective, and therefore we have to use history as a means of our military analysis, because if we don't analyze it correctly and make that analysis in a historical perspective, then we don't understand the choices that we may have to make, or the choices that we do make, the consequences that it may have. You know, so history becomes not just to know from our identification perspective, or to know in relationship to our own identity, but in order to understand what are the strategic moves we need to formulate and what are the tactical moves that we need to make. Like, do we go to a bureaucratic office of the planning office and have someone there to gather information? Do we get the rules, the policies, the laws, and the procedures? I mean, it's under, because they have a history of how they got there. Hmm. And if we don't understand that, then we don't know what kind of move should make in order to secure, because in the end, everything is about power. And power is about our relationship with each other, primarily, and then with others. But if we don't know the rules of engagement, then we don't know how to assure that what individual behavior is taking place is really in our own individual, our group best interest. So I agree that history is so important, and we should view it from a military perspective in making analysis when you're talking about think tanks, because that's what we should be doing, analyzing, breaking things down, bringing things together in order to make policy, in order to make plans, in order to make tactical maneuvers, in order to have a strategic outlook.
You know, I did find those clips I wanted to play, too, and I'm playing them before we go to break, and then afterwards we'll get some of these calls involved. You know, looking at that thing they had with the NFL early this year when some of the players, I'm focusing on the black players. I'm not talking about some of the white players that got involved for reasons, because their teammates were involved, so they put the hand on their shoulder, or they go arm in arm with them, and the other arm is over their heart, and they still mouthing words to the Star Spangled Banner. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the mindset of some of the black players that wanted to get involved because of what Kaepernick did. Alignment for the San Diego Chargers, Russell Okung wrote an open letter to other players in reference to his feelings on the whole situation and how he didn't support Kaepernick in the beginning because he really didn't understand it. But he said in retrospect now he fully agrees on what Kaepernick was doing, and he thinks it's necessary for the players to start talking to one another and forming a strategy against NFL and some of these owners trying to dictate what they do. I don't know whether you got to read his open letter, Richard.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he was saying that some of the public think that, you know, we talk all the time, or we go out with one another, or we're close friends off the field. He said some of that, a lot of the times, is not true. But he said that the players need to develop means where they can communicate strategies to how they want to deal with the situation. And he left his contact information in the open letter to other players. But, you know, I think what he's proposing is good, but he needs to network with people out there. He got one of the men that helped some of the athletes in the 68 Olympics is right out there, Harry Edwards. There's people out there that can talk with some of the young men to give them advice, strategy, and things of that nature. At least he was man enough to admit that he didn't agree with Kaepernick in the beginning at what he was doing. He said he didn't think it would work and it didn't mean anything, and he really didn't understand it. So he was big enough to admit that he was wrong in writing. And say that he is fully, and in fact, he said if he had Kaepernick's number, he would call him and tell him himself. So I just thought it was interesting reading the open letter by Russell Okung, I guess I'm pronouncing his name right, of the San Diego Chargers. He's a, I think he's a defensive lineman. But I wanted to read, I wanted to play two clips. One by the young man's aunt that was killed over there in Niger. Now, his aunt raised him because his mother died. His aunt and uncle raised him from, I think, when he was about 8 years old, because his mother died of tuberculosis in 1999 when he was just a little boy. So basically his aunt was his mother. Mm-hmm. And they did a interview with her. On one of those news agencies did an interview with her. But I want to play two clips. And the one clip, you're familiar with the athlete. I guess some of the listening audience is, or familiar with the situation this athlete was involved in a number of years ago. And then I'm going to play her clip because I want to draw a parallel between both of them. But let me cue both of these up before we go to a break.
Now, during his 10-year NBA career, Craig Hodges was known for his three-point shooting. He led the league twice, and in 1991 hit 19 straight in the three-point contest. But he believes making points of another kind cost him his career. When he and his championship-winning Chicago Bulls teammates visited the White House in 1992 in the aftermath of the L.A. riots, he delivered a letter to President George H.W. Bush detailing the problems plaguing the country. Hodges believes that moment of activism led to his never playing again in the NBA. He would ultimately lose a 1996 lawsuit against the NBA based on that premise, but his 25-year-old story resonates as a marker on the timeline of athletes and activism.
First, I want to thank Almighty God for his mercy for us to meet like this in such violent times, but at the same time, for us to be able to meet like this in a peaceful situation.
My grandpops, my uncles, they all taught me about the conscious athletes of that time. Jim Browns, Muhammad Ali's, Lou Alcindor's, Kurt Flood's, guys that I look to as far as being able to balance consciousness and balance their sport.
Going to the White House wearing a dashiki.
When I go to a royal occasion, I should dress in my royalty garment. Bush was cool to me when I got to the White House. That's an awesome garment.
And handing Bush a letter about every problem in the country.
When you meet the president, you can't give him anything. So in proper protocol, I gave it to his press secretary.
That takes a lot of integrity. Most people, when they get to the White House, they're not thinking about the whole world and how they can make a difference.
I didn't ever think that me going to the White House, asking President Bush to consider the issues of black people, would cost me $40 to $50 million. I'm leading the league in three-point percentage. I'm a two-time world champion. I'm a three-point shooting champion three times in a row, and can't nobody use my services. So my cause is my people. And I think it's not only noble, but it's worthy, and it's time to do it. Back in the day, if somebody wanted to cover you, it was a matter of the spin that they put on it, where now you can put your own spin on things. We have to realize the fact that we have some power within the context of where you are. I think it's only right that I utilize that platform to change lives. It's the poor people's program that Dr. King was on when he died. He gave us the evil triplets: racism, militarism, and economic exploitation. If we deal with them three, we will deal with all the ills on the planet. And those are the marching orders that he left for me. So in all of this, I was dealing with Dr. King, giving me my marching orders on those principles.
Now, let me play this other clip before I make a comment, because I want to draw a parallel between both of them.
In a Daily Mail exclusive, Sergeant LaDavid Johnson's aunt, Katrina Johnson, joins us now from Miami, Florida. Katrina, thank you so much for joining us. I am so sorry for your loss. I cannot imagine what your family is going through right now. First off, how are you and your family holding up?
We hurt. But the funeral is in a couple of days, so it's going to be even harder for everybody in the family.
We heard Representative Frederica Wilson's take on the conversation President Trump had with your family, as well as Trump's tweet saying her claims were fabricated. What do you know about that call?
All I know is my family was in a car on the way to the airport to pick up his body, and the words that he told his grieving widow is just uncalled for. I don't think that nobody should tell agreement with the words that he told her. He knew what he signed up for. I think that was just dead ass wrong.
There are a lot of people that agree with you, Katrina, and a lot of people feel President Trump's alleged comments, if true, were at best insensitive and at worst callous. When you heard them, how did they make you feel?
Hurt, disgusted, disrespected in the honor of my nephew's name. But I don't feel like, you know, we all are people, and words can hurt worse than somebody putting their hands on you. So I don't feel like that's something that he should have said. I felt like he should have just wrote her a condolence letter, telling her, sending his condolences that way, instead of telling a grieving widow the words that he told her. That was just wrong.
For you, what's the hardest part of everything that's happened?
The hardest part is not going to be able to see him anymore. To talk to him, to watch him become the man that he has become. He's leaving behind three babies. One is on the way that he's not going to be able to see or watch grow up. He has a son and a daughter that he's not going to be able to watch grow up. It's hurtful because he's not there anymore. He's not going to be there to cook the Christmas dinners and make the homemade cakes and pies and stuff with his aunties and uncles and have fun with his kids and take his wife out because he loved his wife and his kids. It's heartbreaking for all of us.
Katrina, again, I want to thank you so much for talking with us and for setting the record straight. And our thoughts and our prayers certainly go out to you and your family.
And I want everyone to know that our president is an SOB.
Katrina, thanks again.
Thank you.
Richard, before we take a break, I want to draw a parallel between Craig Hodges, a former professional basketball player, and the young man's mother or surrogate mother, his aunt, that raised him. You know, when Craig Hodges talked about, you know, I lost all that money, but I felt a responsibility to my people to utilize a platform to say something in their behalf. And he was saying that all, you know, he didn't just say athletes in general, but he said everybody should use, and he was talking about black folks, so you use any platform they have to speak to the issues to help their people. Now, that's what Craig said, and he did mm-hmm. it and lost money from it. Now, the parallel is, to me, the young man's mother. Now, under normal circumstances, she'll never get to speak to a national audience or have a world audience basically listening to her interview, because I think that was done by the Daily Mail, and that's distributed all over the world. And she used that opportunity to say something in behalf of folks here. I'm talking about black folks. When she gave her opinion in reference to Trump, when she said, listen, our president is a son of a bitch. Using that pulpit at that time to speak to an issue. She might not get a chance again, but at least she let her feelings be known. See, some of these folks that don't use the opportunities that they have, some of these people have a mic in front of their face all the time or on TV all the time, and they act like these things don't go on or don't affect, and maybe they don't affect them personally, but they affect black people. And that goes to something that I want to mention to what you said earlier. And we'll do that in maybe the second hour of the program. Because I want to speak to some of these issues in reflection to some of the things that you talked about earlier. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to add some of these callers to the mix. And you can get involved, too, at 215-490-9832, because we did have some calls on hold, and I'm going to get to them right after the break. We're in open forum tonight, so again, you can always be involved. You're the special guest tonight, so give us a call at 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We're in open forum. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
Venture.
A boy is born in hot down Mississippi, surrounded by for more than it's so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet scrub the floors for Minnie, and you best believe she hardly gets a penny.
on that horn. Thanks a lot. Wow. New York, just like I pictured it. Skyscrapers and everything.
Hey, brother. Hey, come here, Slick. Hey,
you look hip, man. Hey, you want to make yourself $5, man? Yeah, bro. Look here. Run this street for me right quick, okay?
Run this street
for me. What? Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street. Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get in that cell, nigga.
God. No.
His hair is long, his feet are hard and pretty. He spends his life walking the streets of New York City. He's almost dead from breathing in air pollution. He tried to fight, but to him that's no solution. Living in just enough for the shit.
Welcome back. To Time for an Awakening, and we're in open forum this evening. And you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
We had a couple callers on hold before the break. Let me go to some of these calls and get them involved. Let's go to Newport News. Hello, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I didn't expect to call in. What's up? I'm just kind of listening in, trying to get some clarity on what you're talking about. But only thing I'll add to it is at my age of 64, one of the biggest things I see is kind of like Fred Hampton was saying, educating black people to understand politics is about getting some redress when you cast your vote. Mm-hmm. I find too many of the people, even in local politics, you try to get them to understand you can't improve your neighborhood unless you go before that council and demand that they give your taxpayer money back to the area you live in.
Exactly.
Too many of my people, I want to say it and then clear the mic and let you go ahead and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Too many of the people, even my own family, will tell you, well, that's up to you to fix this. No, you know, you're not understanding how politics works. I don't care about the bigot up the street not liking me as a human being. I care about the money and the government, local, and the school district that has the systemic power to limit me, the banker. I don't care about the bigot across town. I can defend myself against him. But I can't defend myself against a whole structure that's designed to weed me out, whether it's picking up my garbage on time or cleaning my street and maintaining the community so my property values will go up.
Hey, listen, stay with
us. Work too, brother.
Stay with us. Hey, Brother Richard, you know, he hit the nail on the head, and it was just what you was talking about. But comment on what he said.
I mean, it's definite that we – you know, brother, when you were saying that, I'm thinking one time it was a person that told us that politics is the marketplace where you really kind of compete for the limited resources. And if you don't, and the vote is one way you go get into just being a competitor. Because if you're not there, if you don't put the right person in, then they can lobby for those resources. And you are competing and against some powerful people like the bankers, the realtors' interests, you know, other ethnic group interests. So I agree wholeheartedly that the political education that we need to understand that it isn't just about pulling the lever and letting somebody else believing they're going to do something for us. It's about going in there recognizing this is what we want. And this is what we're going to do to get it. So well, I agree with
it. I'm going to try to add a little bit of what I hear in all of you speaking, and I'm just assuming that you're younger than I am. I hear you talking about we have to do as a people. I heard in Hodges speak, what I do for my people. That means you have a collective mindset. I'm about a mile away from the school of the first 6 years of my education. It was at a place called James Baldwin Johnson. It was the only school for blacks in this county, York County, Virginia, a home of Cornwallis' cave where the British fought about 16, 17 miles from Jamestown. So I hear it all. I understand the white folks that have been here and built a legacy off the back of slavery and talk about their heritage. But our people don't have that same connection. For some reason, the idea that you're descendants of slaves is a negative. And I'm saying, why would you be ashamed of being descendants of human beings that were deprived of everything that was that should have been a part of their American experience to gain and obtain wealth passed on to us? All of that was systemically deprived from you. So why do you hold that as a negative? In other words, you got more right to public redress now than any white man in the country.
There you go.
Your people were the ones you deprived. They were the ones that passed on wealth from generation after generation and deprived you of even getting in the marketplace. I have an ongoing dispute with some of these scholars out here. I love them when they talk. Eddie Glaude and Pope. These are all learned people at Howard University holding professorships, and they get up and tell us about the 13th Amendment and what people need to do. Hold on. If you read the 13th Amendment and you understand basic English, you understand it has an exception clause. The only reason that exception clause was in there is so that slavery, under the guise of private ownership of a human being, was cast off to the state and the government. So if you were duly convicted, it didn't say whether you were justly convicted or rightfully convicted or none of that. It said duly. Duly means you go through a process. It didn't make a damn whether that process was rigged or not. Once you were processed through there, you would lease right back to the same people that used to own you. So how can you tell me now, 400 years later, that I have to bow my head and not feel that this public, this government owes me? Government is for the collective, the good of the all. So why not? Why can't I raise hell over getting police protection? Why do I have to tell you to keep up cleaning up my streets and picking up my garbage on time? Don't give me no mess about the tax base. Longevity says you can't build a brand new project and upgrade everything for them and leave me without. Who was here first? I'll let you brothers go on.
Hey, thank you for your contribution, brother. I love that call. Oh, man, Richard. You know, what he's saying kind of leads me into what I wanted to say in that second hour. I want to hold it a little bit longer. Let's take another call here. Let's go to 602.
Yes, brother. Anytime, brother Richard. This brother Marcus from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. Good brothers.
Good, man.
You know, it was, you know, that statement that Trump made to that widow. You know, that wasn't just an affront to that black soldier, you know, but it was an affront to all military personnel currently serving in the armed forces to say that they signed up for, you know what you signed up for, when he himself got 4 deferments from the military, serving in the military. He wasn't willing to make that the ultimate sacrifice, and he's a major benefactor of the, you know, of whatever rights people like the soldier went and gave his life for, you know. So these people there, he's a hypocrite, you know. He's trying to take away the rights from the NFL players to protest, you know, rights that people sacrificed and died for, you know, when he himself is not willing to make that ultimate sacrifice. He's shooting himself in the foot and demoralizing his own military, because when you're out there fighting, ain't nobody see color. When, you know, this man gonna have my back, you know, you gotta have, and the thing is, they left that soldier there, you know.
I know it.
That black soldier, they left him there. It was the Niger army that turned his body over to the U.S. military. So it was talk about no man left behind, please, you know. And you know, to some degree, we have our people to, you know, I agree, you know, we have poor leadership in the black community. I do agree. But to some degree, too, we have to blame our people, too. Because it is the, if our people had any consciousness, this foolishness wouldn't be going on. And I don't think, too, it's lack of consciousness, too. Because I tell you, from experience dealing with my folks in the 1990s, when we were in Harlem, and they had Milambe Brat, and it was in the height, the early 1990s. Everybody, everything was in a fervor, okay? We used to have forums at the Harriet Tubman School on 127th Street in New York. And 1 week, you would have, it would be crowded, okay? The whole, it was standing room only. When we had the white folks up there to talk, it was, man, you know, you couldn't get in. So the next week, you know, we had, the nationalists would come and say, okay, you know, we're doing our program for Namibia and, you know, we want our people. You could count the amount of people on your hands in the auditorium. So it's not a lack of ignorance too, you know, about people, you know. It seems as if, as Malcolm Arce said, he said, our people trying to, they ain't trying to escape from the plantation. They're trying to see how we can make the plantation more comfortable. You see, how can I sit here at the plantation and, you know, make it more accommodating for me? Well, as I said, 400 years, if it ain't accommodate you in 400 years, it ain't going to accommodate you in the next 50 years. And I heard Dr. Clark say this out of his mouth in the Alpala Theater. He even asked a question what he thought about Marcus Garvey's program. He said, and this is Dr. Clark speaking, he said, unless we embrace Marcus Garvey's program, we will die. Unless we grab his program, if we don't grab it, we're gonna die. That was his words. Okay, so anyway, good brothers, you take care, and I'll continue listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call, Brother Marcus.
And Elliot and Brother Marcus, I just want to add, because I guess I find myself just throwing out symbols, but one thing that the historical position that Mr. Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community League provide is strategic intent. I think that we have to, no matter what size our population is, you know, and as Brother Otis brought up, even if when we're looking at the local level, we're, you know, and no matter how big our population is of those who are, of us who are conscious, that we have to constantly keep in mind what is our strategic intent? And if that intent isn't our own sovereignty, then, or if it is our own sovereignty, then we will not, and we, and those of us who call in, I take it, Elliot, and those of us we've seen, even with the younger people who are out there, we stand with a certain pride. And in the clip that you spoke, you know, you presented about the brother, the athlete. It was something in him. He knew, not only knew the protocol of the White House, you don't give the president, you give it to the secretary. He said, I knew the protocol of me as a people, what I need. When I go to a regal event, I dress in my regal attire.
Mm-hmm.
What is my regal attire? My attire that reflects who I am in this environment. So I can, I'm an African. I come with my regal. I don't come in a suit. That's somebody else's regal attire. So I say that to say that we are here. So when we're having these discussions, you know, we are standing tall and we do know what we where we are. And I think that what Mr. Garvey's plan is that the undergirding of that is that the question of our strategic intent, and that strategic intent is our own sovereign our own self-governing. And we can demonstrate that own self-governing no matter where we are. That's my point.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, Richard. Before we go to the next call, let me, I'm going to introduce this now because it went to what Brother Otis was talking about out of Newport News. And it kind of follows up on what you mentioned earlier, Richard, about an historical perspective. And it also relates to what Brother Marcus just stated. You know, these discussions, and they should be had in every city, every town where black folks are. If they're not being discussed, then they need to be introduced for discussion because it's already venues there to discuss these things. Every town and every locality where black people are already has the venue to discuss them. And our people are there every Sunday, every Saturday sometimes, every Wednesday night. Our people are there in these houses of worship, be it Muslim, Christian, Hebrew, they're there. And it's time should be spent with these discussions and not just pie in the sky formulated discussions of what we're going to do in the afterlife, which you don't know what you're going to be. We know what we got to do here. Those discussions need to be had. I believe our people are in a state of emergency and been in a state of a black emergency for a long time now. Serious discussions need to be had. War strategies need to be planned. A critical assessment of our historical experience here with Europeans need to be talked about in an honest discussion. Our experiences since we've come to these shores in this diaspora, North America, some of our brothers in other diasporas was there earlier. If you're talking about the islands, if you're talking about in South America, Brazil and other places, they was there much earlier than our experience here. But the experiences here, if you did a ledger sheet, Richard, and talked about the positives and negatives, I mean, I don't know of any positives you would be able to list. But let's talk about some of the things that the realities. The institution of slavery, which this man put forth, chattel enslavement, destroyed black people's lives. It destroyed the family fabric of black people. Coming here and the elders split up, wives sold, children sold, wives raped in front of their husbands and then given back to the husband. It destroyed the fabric of black families. It destroyed black people's health with the institution of a poor diet. At least pork products, grease, lard, all this type of stuff. Our people made the best of it, and we survived off of it. But it took a toll on our health that we didn't have when we came here. We didn't have this type of family structure that we have now before we came to these shores and was exposed to this man. Our health situation wasn't like it is before we was exposed to Europeans. And a lot of the diet that we were forced to have and made the best of it. The lifespan of our people were definitely shortened by exposure to Europeans. The stress, the pressure of living under chattel enslavement. You know, that was it was experimented, not experimented. It was proposed on other people and tried to be instituted on other people. But other people wasn't strong enough to bear the pressures of it. It almost took them under. Richard, you know it. You have a historical perspective on a lot of these things.
There you go.
That institution of slavery was adopted and tried to be used on other nationalities, and they didn't survive. Our people were strong, but it took a toll on us. The lifespan of our people is not the same as it was before we had exposure to this man and this country that we live in now. Like that cut I played just before we came back from break, Stevie Wonder, Living for the City. We're living just enough. Those pressures, it's still taking a toll on our people. Look at all the health issues that we have. A lot of those things, high blood pressure, diabetes, all of those things either come from diet or stress dealing with being here. And one of the main things, it destroyed the minds of our people. It destroyed our minds in two ways that I can think of right off the bat. One, it destroyed the pride that we have in ourselves and in our culture. I think Marcus alluded to it.
Mm-hmm.
It destroyed it. Well, we don't look at ourselves in a prideful manner. The head bowing, the shame. The shame of talking about our ancestors and what our people went through. I mean, this is real.
Yeah.
Our experience here dealing with this man has been totally, I mean, these things have been deadly. I ain't talking about no just negatives, you know, putting it in a negative positive. They have been deadly. And one of the other ways that it has affected our minds is how we look at our brothers with disdain. And the mindset we have towards black people, period. And especially blacks in other parts of the diaspora, where we were clearly taken by this man. We look at black folks in other parts of the diaspora with disdain. And if some of our brethren that are in other diasporas are talked about in relation to the black man here in America, oh, I'm not black. Oh no, that's not me. I'm Hispanic. I'm Haitian. I'm Cuban. I'm from Brazil. Come on here. The only difference that made me not Haitian or Brazilian was a slave ship and my ancestors being brought here. But the negativity that we look at our brothers with, all this type of stuff stems from that system of white hegemony that we've been exposed to and the negativity that it has done, the terrible damage that it has done to the minds of our people. Instead of us rallying around this situation and devising strategies to defeat this man and his system, just like Marcus said, we're looking for a comfortable spot in it. And that ain't going to work. That's not going to work. Because people that's looking for a comfortable spot in it are going to die in it.
You know, This year represents the 50th year of a book that came out, The Crisis of the Negro Intellectual. And to the point that you're making, Harold Cruz, who made a critique of the black intellectual of the time, that's from the 40s through the 60s. And one of the things he said that I think emphasizes what you're saying is that blacks would never achieve freedom, United States and white America, if they do not first build their own institutions. By declaring the need for institution building, Cruz did not limit his scope to political and economic institutions. He also argued that black freedom required independent black cultural institutions. This is where intellectuals came in. The special function of the Negro intellectual, Cruz wrote, is a cultural one. Blacks had to believe they could be free. I want to emphasize that again because I think that ties to your mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing. Blacks had to believe that they could be free, but such a belief could only take root if blacks had their own cultural institutions, theaters, newspapers, schools, etc. By working in racially integrated cultural settings and institutions, or worse, by working for white cultural patrons, black intellectuals have been unable to obtain the cultural independence that was a necessary precondition of black freedom. And that's not something that I've seen, based off of what you're saying, Elliot, that relates just to the intellectuals, the working class, the hustlers, those who are business owners. If we don't promote our own cultural identity, value that, then how can we stand tall? How can we really address the issue of our mind and under that, the issue of the values of saying it's okay to be black?
I mean, you know, some of those authors, Richard, you mentioned Harold Cruz, those should be required reading among young people coming up. And that way, when they get to be older and adult, they have a perspective of what they're dealing with. That should be required reading. Young people and some older people have no clue who Harold Cruz was.
There you go.
What he wrote about, what he talked about. You can't go to no other nationalities and ask them about some of their writers that they can that they feel as though been important to their culture and ask them about. Listen, these Europeans make you read and understand writers that they felt was important to their culture.
Mm-hmm.
Shakespeare and all these other freaks, some of them moral degenerates. We done read and know all about all these people. And talk intellectually about them like they've been a part of us. And if you could see them men now in their settings that they were back then, they probably try to force you to be a servant. I mean, but that goes to what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Those people we should know about, because some of the philosophies that they put forth and the strategies that they talked about can be utilized or even tweaked and utilized now. But if we don't even know who they were, what they talked about, you keep reinventing the wheel, and then sometimes it don't work. And then with the mindset a lot of our people have, they don't want to sit with you to discuss anything, because it goes back to some of the points that I just raised. And it's right. Other points that can be raised by some, you know, listening audience or other people. I just thought of some things off the top of my head. Now, I mean, we got work to do, but the good thing about it is this work is being done out here. It's being done out here by people, and they're starting this process, and some of it has been doing it for a while. That's why we try to utilize this program to get people on, community people, authors, professors at some of these schools that have been talking about, highlighting, and doing the work in some of these areas so our people can be familiar with what's going on.
And that's one of the reasons why, Elliot, and I'm bringing this up as you say that, so that people can get living examples in relationship to what we can do. And everybody are, there's some of us that we're already doing, you know, and therefore utilizing this program to help share what you're doing so we can all see if we're not doing something, then we can see based off of what you're doing, what we can do from where we are.
Exactly.
I was, you know, yesterday, you know, I volunteer at the African American Museum. So a group of parents in central Pennsylvania decided, now this is parents, they decide, they come together and they bring their children to take them to different places. So the museum in Philadelphia was where they were bringing them. And the group is not large, about 12 or more. And the children ran from 4 to 12, 10.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're talking about the history of Black Philadelphia, which is what our main exhibit deals with, a colonial history of Black Philadelphia. So I have to deal with a 4-year-old and imparting about slavery, right? Ownership. And moving through that timeline of 100 years. And then we have an art exhibit. But this is something that we can do that, which, like you said, in shaping the minds that everybody, I mean, it doesn't cost us and we don't have to be paid.
and it becomes a part of our political work. And this makes me want to tie in a quote that Cabral said. And it's not even a quote, if you don't, just a few minutes, and not even a few minutes, but Cabral, because I'm reading the A People's History of the Third World, The Darker Nations by Vijay Parshad, right? And he's taking us through the non-aligned movement. Which he brought me back to Cabral, you know, and the speech he gave, Tell No Lies, you know, that he had gave. And he said, I just think that this is important, what we're saying, this paragraph in where he says, develop political work in our armed forces, whether regular or guerrilla, whenever they may be, hold frequent meetings, demand serious political work from political commissioners, start political committees formed by the political commissars and commanders of each unit in the regular army. Oppose tendency to militarism and make sure fighters and an exemplary militant of our party. Educate ourselves, educate other people, the population in general, to fight fear and ignorance, to eliminate little by little the subjugation to nature and natural forces which our economy has yet to master. Convince little by little, particularly the militants of the party, that we shall end by conquering the fear of nature and that man is the strongest force in nature. Demand from responsible party members that they dictate to themselves seriously, to they dedicate themselves seriously to study, that they interest themselves in the things and problems of our daily life and struggle, in their fundamental and essential aspect, and not simply in their appearance. Learn from life, learn from our people, learn from books, learn from the experience of others. Never stop learning. Is that what you're saying, Elliot? Right? I mean, this is 1960. This is a guerrilla fighter in Africa. Is that what you're saying? That those strategies and techniques, we need to constantly keep bringing up in relationship to what we need to be doing now.
Listen, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Listen, when we start the program out, we talk about our people being destroyed for the lack of knowledge. Our people are not stupid. We're just not exposed to the materials that we need to be exposed to. We need to expose one another to these things to help the tools to help our people move forward. And they're there. Our ancestors left all of these things for us, Richard. They left the blueprints. They left them for us. But if we refuse to pick up these things, if we are not aware of these things, if we don't go back and use, like you've been harping on, an historical perspective of our situation, then we don't know. We're almost like a guy wandering around in a dark room. He don't know where the door is. He don't know where the light switch is. So he's feeling around on the wall. We don't have to do that. We don't have to operate from square one all the time and keep reinventing the wheel. The wheel's already been invented to move our people forward. Brother Marcus constantly talks about Mr. Garvey's plan. That's a definite vehicle to move our people forward.
And they are open every Sunday at 3:00. Well, anywhere those places, if I didn't know the right places anyway, and that's just an example. And there's other, as you said, there's other organizations that are doing things that are meeting that need people to assist in the work, lifting at RBG and others.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the operational unity. That's where, when we talked with Malik Zulu Shabazz last week about people that are capable of unifying people. I mean, you got a lot of voices out there, but some people are not capable of bringing other people together. And that's a skill and a talent. And we do need an operational unity to move our people forward, because it's good ideas out there. But we need a platform where we all realize a common enemy and what we need to do to move our people forward. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, We're going to continue the conversation. You can be involved, too, at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening tonight. We're in open forum, and you are the special guest. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. There's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful. Today our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in open forum this evening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard, you know, that clip with Martin and Malcolm, you know, King states that we don't have anything to be ashamed of, and that goes to what Brother Otis talked about earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
But he also stated, don't let anybody take your manhood. Now, that was from a man that used a nonviolent philosophy in the beginning. It was clear that his mentality and his understanding started to change towards the end of his life, towards the period when he was murdered. But, I mean, it's good to look at some of those things and use an historical perspective, because we let white folks determine the parameters on how we look at Dr. King and others. When the time for that holiday comes around, they can't wait to play that 63 speech about black girls and black boys holding hands and all that other stuff. But it was clear that his philosophy changed. They don't deal in that part of it. They make sure that we get immersed in that philosophy that didn't work. And Dr. King himself said that I think I made a mistake when he talked with Harry Belafonte. So, you know, that's the historical perspective. That's what we're talking about. Things being put in historical perspective. Look at the successes and failures of some of our elders, and then plan strategy. See what we need to do. Look at what Malcolm said in that speech in 64 when he said this government has failed us and white liberals posing as our friends have failed us. Now, that was completely accurate in 64. It's still accurate now. But we can add something else to the mix that wasn't involved in 64. See, in 64, you didn't have the black politician. They wasn't widespread. You had a few. I think Adam Clayton Powell and a few of them. But you didn't have all these black politicians that are running around now.
No.
So with the historical perspective, we can add them to the mix. Not only white liberals, Hillary Clinton, the Clintons and others, have failed us. In fact, they didn't have our best interest at heart anyway. But the black politicians that have been posing as our friends have failed us. That can be added with an historical perspective of what we're dealing with. And then we know what we have to do, because the solutions to what he's talking about is still effective now. A nationalist approach is what we need.
And that's why I like that brother. I never get his name right. Esseron?
No.
Sovereign Psyche?
Ezra Alharon. Mm-hmm.
That's why I like it, because that whether we actually operate or look, you can see the visible of it, at least we are thinking like that. And that's what, to me, what men and women, you know, black men, black women, we have to think like we're operating as a sovereign entity. That's, you know, other than that, we're operating as some serf or servant, which means that we're being a serf or servant, especially if you're not being a serf and servant to yourself. You're looking to be a serf and servant to somebody else. And that doesn't matter whether you're a political agent or a CEO.
Yeah,
if you're a CEO of somebody's company, somebody else's company, and that somebody else's company is hiring predominantly all the people of their particular persuasion, you just a serf or servant.
Yeah, and then that goes right back to what we just heard, somebody else taking your manhood.
Mm.
Dr. King said, don't let anybody take your manhood. So what you going to do about that? How are you going to take that? How are we going to put that in the historical perspective of what we've been dealing with? Does anybody fit that description? Discussions that need to be had, Richard.
There you go.
Let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Richard, how you doing, my brother?
Good now. How you feeling?
I'm doing fine. I praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Elliot, Brother Otis and Brother Marcus, they were spot on when they was very insightful in the things that they said. And it was especially good hearing from Brother Otis, because, you know, I got family down in the Newport News area, you know. So just to hear somebody call from the area, it just definitely warmed my heart, you know. And I hope Brother Otis calls, you know, I hope he calls more often. Like, same with Brother Marcus, because them brothers, they always got some insightful things to say when they do call. You know, Brother Elliot and Richard, I really don't know where to begin, because y'all got so much stuff out there, man. My head is just spinning, because it's just so much to try to absorb and stuff. And it's good stuff now. Don't get me wrong. It's just there's so much to absorb, because like you said, Elliot, you had to add the chuckle, Elliot, when you mentioned earlier when you first came on, you made the little off-the-cuff remark about, you said, when the dummy made the insulting comment to the widow of the brother, you said you incorrectly, you mistakenly said Bush. Then you said, oh, 45. You said same thing.
Yeah.
She might have been the same.
He was Bush was just a little more skillful in his.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
This guy is just,
make no mistake.
Yeah, it's the same thing, but go ahead.
Two white devils, no doubt about that. Yeah, but you're right, Elliot. Bush is more skillful and more, you know, cunning. He's not as out front and as bombastic as Trump is. But he's the same old cunning devil like the rest of them and stuff. You know, he's just more smooth with his stuff, you know.
This guy makes Bush's son, you know, and prior to him, everybody thought Bush Jr. was like a dim bulb. This guy make Bush Jr. look like a genius.
Well, you know, Brother Elliot, as you well know, brother, anybody listen to the terrestrial radio station, a black station here in Philadelphia, I have made that comment many times. I said, I always thought that Bush Jr. was the dumbest president this country ever produced. I said, well, this dummy, he makes Bush look like a Rhodes Scholar. This guy is a real idiot, man. And, you know, it rings hollow, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, when you talk about this, how this brother died. Like you say, it's clear he was deserted. He was left, like you say, left behind. And it just rings so hollow when you heard that familiar refrain, thank you for your service. Some kind of thanks for he got, didn't he? And then you add insult to injury, you got the dimwit, insulting the man's wife. And that's why I was so glad, Ellie, you played the clip with a sister's. Was that a sister or cousin or something that said that Bush was a, I mean,
no, that was his well, that was his surrogate mother. His mother died when he was 8, and his aunt and uncle took him in and raised him. So that was basically his mother. It was his aunt, but it was his surrogate mother.
Well, I'm glad she spoke her mind, because she spoke from the heart. She said he's an SOB, which he is. You know what I mean? Him and all the rest of them devils up there and stuff. You know, but I'm glad she spoke truth to power, you know?
Now, well, Joe, let me ask you something, because especially some of our women that consider themselves feminists first and black women second, you know, where's the feminist groups? Where's these white women that always want to get black women's help when it comes to issues? Where are they on this issue? Listen, this man called the women that was in that car, he called them all liars, including the congressperson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they telling a lie. Now, what motivation would they have to lie on this guy? They're in a grieving moment. He calls and says something stupid, and they expose it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the motivation to lie on what he said?
Exactly.
There is no motivation. He said it, and he knows it. But then you had other whites that rallied to his defense.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And the other ones don't. The ones like Malcolm says, all these liberals that's been posing as our friends, they ain't said nothing. The Democrats and all the others, they ain't say nothing. He attacked this woman. He attacked two black women. He attacked the grieving widow, and he attacked the congressperson.
See, brother, you're making a very case for showing the racist, bigoted double standard even among white women, because don't forget it was 85% to 90% white women voted for Donald Trump, with 90% or more of black women voted for Hillary Clinton, right? So you see clearly that, you know, and this was in spite of the fact after that clip came out with Trump, see, he was grabbing white women by the you know, vaginal area and all that kind of stuff, yet these white women still, in their bigotry, still voted for him. Not that I'm saying Hillary Clinton was a greater choice, but I'm just saying, just show you how bigoted white women are, because like Brother Rob always say, we always talk about how bad this white man is, and Lord knows he is bad. He's a real demon. But remember, the white man didn't come on this earth by himself. Did not the white man come out the white woman's womb?
You got it.
All right, so I mean, so hey, you know, two peas from a pie, you know what I mean? So she's just as bad as her male counterpart when it comes right down to it. But see, Elliot, when you look at your point is very insightful, though, when you talk about where are these white women groups that, where is NOW, the National Organization for Women? Now, these white women groups, they came out against Bill Cosby, and they always, and you notice, if you notice, maybe I'm missing something, Elliot, but I've been, like you and Richard, I pay attention to the news, you notice National Organization for Women are silent. When all this stuff came out, this white boy, what's his name, Howard Fine, whatever, it was, you know, the white boy that just got, you know, for all the women came saying he
Weinstein. Weinstein.
Weinstein, yeah, Howard, thanks, Ellen. Weinstein. You notice the National Organization for Women been silent. But yet they came out against Bill Cosby years back here. They came out against Mike Tyson. They came out against, I'll never forget to show you the true colors years ago in Warren Moon, the black Hall of Fame quarterback. He in a domestic situation with his wife. He slapped her. He lost his temper and slapped her in the face, which he was wrong. He apologized. You know, these white women demanded, they went to the Houston Oilers, who the team I think that Warren was playing for at the time, and demanded that he get kicked out the league. You know what I mean? The Houston didn't do it, which was smart. They didn't do it. He apologized, and him and his wife reconciled, and they moved on. He made a mistake. We all heard him. He made a mistake. All right, that same time, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, at the time when Warren Moon had the incident with his wife, Bobby Cox, who happened to be Caucasian, the manager of the Atlanta Braves, he not only smacked his wife, he beat the hell out of her. Punched her, had her face look like Mike, like she went 10 rounds with Mike Tyson. Guess what, Elliot and Richard? That same white women group, National Organization for Women, didn't say a word. Their silence was deafening. So all they do is, like you say, Elliot and Richard, all they do is come out against a black man. You would think they would be coming out strong against Donald Trump right now. But they won't, because, again, their whole thing is to go after black men. That's their whole lock, stock, and trade. You know what I'm saying? And we as black people need to be clear about that, man. Make no mistake about it. This is where they're coming from, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, you brought up that stuff going on in Hollywood, but we know what that's all about. And you see what's happening, because, all those producers, directors, and all that other stuff, they have the same persuasion as that guy that got nailed.
Mm-hmm.
So they rally around. They rally around and help him.
Sure. And
they know that he's been exposed. Exactly. They know he's been exposed.
White Jewish people. That's
but
right.
But they let him retire from his company, which you know he ain't retired from
of
that company.
Of course not.
And then they're going to send him to a rehab where he can stop grabbing women's behinds and sexually abusing them.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, they're not lambasting him. They're not roasting him.
No.
They know he's been doing this. Some of the so-called top A-list white actresses done said he done did it to them.
Sure.
They know it's been going on all along.
See, Ellen, what it comes down to, Ellen Richard, Feinstein and stuff, he's a so-called white Jewish liberal. Well, Malcolm said our liberal friends have sold us out pretty much. They failed us, as Malcolm would say. Well, see, again, it just goes to show you, Ellen, it don't matter what their political stripes are. White men, I'm clear on this, I make no bones about it, white men, whether they are Jewish, ethnicity, Irish, Italian, Polish, whatever, white men, period. And make no mistake about it, they have a sense of entitlement. Now, this white boy, Weinstein, he's known as a big Democrat liberal, you know, donator. You know, he donated to Obama, Clinton, all the rest of them, right? And you got, and then the flip side, you got a white boy like Bill O'Reilly from Fox News, and you got, you know, all the rest of them devils. Now, one is Republican, Democrats, conservative, liberal. It doesn't matter. White men, period, got that sense of entitlement. They think they have a right to disrespect women, say whatever they want out their mouth, grab women, all that kind of stuff, because this is who they are and stuff. And you see this clearly. You see this played out over and over again in America, that white men have a sense of entitlement. And see, when you played that clip earlier, Brother Elliot, with the athletes, with Craig Hodges and stuff, and I like how Craig Hodges broke it down when he said about my people. He was saying that if that's the price I have to pay, so be it. Because, you know, and he showed clearly what you see, the parallel with Colin Kaepernick, what he's going through now. Like he said, here's a man that was a two-time NBA champion, won the three-point contest and stuff like that, you know, playing on a team with Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, yet Gabe Bush, press secretary, that letter, and he wanted to shicky to the White House. He was pretty much whiteboard. I don't like to use the word blackboard. He was whiteboard from the NBA. And another brother at the same right around the same time, or a little later, Chris Jackson, also known as Mahmoud Abdul-Raul, because he said he was pre-Kaepernick. He said, I'm not standing for that racist national anthem. Here was a brother in a promised career, one of the shooters in NBA history, couldn't get a job after that. You know what I mean? He had to go over to Europe or wherever like that and play over in the European League or whatever. I mean, just show you how these devils are, how hateful they are when a black man or woman stand up, how they are punished, how they are. And the sad part about it, unlike now, you got more black athletes today stand up and speaking in defense of Kaepernick, but for Craig Hodges back then and Mahmoud Abdul-Raul, he didn't have the brothers sticking up for him. You know, and that's the sad part about it. See, at least with Kaepernick now, he got brothers from other sports speaking on his behalf, like LeBron James and others, whereas them two brothers back then, they didn't have that kind of, you know, extended support. You know what I mean, Brother Ellen Richard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As you're developing this, it brings back the question or point. Because at one point, it seemed like the audience to the sports games were talking about whether they were going to not watch the game because of Kaepernick not being able to be hired. And now you see more and more of the athletes taking positions, being supportive of him. When you talked about those earlier times, the one thing was that the fans wasn't one way or another. Now that you have a larger black fan base, and that's by television watching or by going to the game, I'm wondering, is it the fan base also that's a part of this equation that making the owners and even the president actually have to push back? Because as you said earlier, they pushed back, these guys didn't get hired. Now the players are coming forward like,
like, you know, you're going to deal with us. Mm-hmm. But they're still pushing back because they're just supposed to be entertainers.
Exactly. And see, Brother Richard, you made a very profound statement with that last statement you made. See, what a lot of them brothers starting to realize, and LeBron James, he's ahead of the learning curve in that respect. See, LeBron figured out early on that these white boys look at him, like you say, he's just an employee, just a hired hand. So LeBron had to push, like when his owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Dan Gilbert, when LeBron first left Cleveland several years ago, this owner wrote a racist letter to the Cleveland Plain Dealer. That's a newspaper in Cleveland where he lambasted LeBron. He called LeBron all kinds of names, Benedict Arnold. I mean, some of the comments he made was border on racism. Pretty well, even border was racism. So bad that he got fined by the NBA, at the time, David Stern, the NBA commissioner, and Reverend Jesse Jackson, you know, came out against Dan Gilbert and said, "You talking about LeBron like he's a runaway slave?" You know what I mean? And I think that woke LeBron up. Now I know you can debate whether, you know, going back to Cleveland was a good idea after the way that devil treated him, but that's LeBron's choice. But I think that put a seed in LeBron's mind. That he realized that I got to start looking at the business aspect of this. I got to start looking at terms of being my own man, my own business entity. You know, being maybe a future owner or whatever like that. You know what I mean? And that's the problem, like you say, Brother Richard. Too many of these brothers, they don't realize early on that these white men don't care nothing about them. Once they can't play ball no more, the majority of them kick to the curb. If they don't force their own niche while they playing ball, get the endorsements, you know, try to set up some kind of business, you know, try to push forward in some kind of management position, or maybe even like in Michael Jordan's case, some kind of part ownership or majority ownership, they realize that like the white boys, like the Troy Aikmans of the world, all them, they look at John Elway's, the white man, look out for them. But for the brothers, for the most part, they kick to the curve. So these brothers got to start realizing that these white men look at them nothing but hired hands, whether it's in basketball, baseball, football, hockey, et cetera, et cetera. So these brothers got to definitely change their mindset around, you know?
And my concern is that we the audience who consume these products called these entertainment products, recognize that these men, these young men are looked at, as you say, as hired hand, as nothing but servant. Because as long as we support them, not necessarily that, because if we're silent, if we don't provide, I mean, that's why I brought up about that talk about at one point, not watching it. And, you know, people were saying they weren't going to watch. They were going to protest watching the NFL. So we have to always recognize that it's two sides to this coin. That the players have to stand up, but the what they call consumer, we the people have to support those players. We can't just let them fight, because that's a hard fight, fighting against the owners and
white owners, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And Brother Rich, I like what Malcolm Jenkins, the young brother that played for the Eagles safety. I like the comment he played. They played a comment of his on CNN. I think it was either last night or Friday night when, you know, he attended that meeting up in New York. So the white reporter, he was trying to probe Brother Malcolm. He was like saying, "Well, what was discussed up there? What about the protests? Is that going to stop?" And Malcolm Jenkins looked this white reporter in the eye, Elliot and Richard, and said, "No, it's not. It's not going to stop. It's going to continue." He says, because he said, "Well, don't you?" He said, "How you feel with the fans being offended with y'all guys? You know, basically what the white reporter was saying. I want y'all guys realize that white people that watch football getting tired of y'all guys taking a knee and all that kind of stuff." And the guy, and so Michael said, "Well," he said, "Look," he says, "I play for the Philadelphia Eagles." He said, "My goal is to be prepared each Sunday to play football at my peak maximum. He says, and hopefully bring Philadelphia championship. He says, but at the same time, he says, I, as a black man, and I like it. He said it straight up, Brother Ellen Mitchell. He made me feel proud. He said, me as a black man, he said, I have a responsibility to the community that I come from. And that, to me, that says it all right there. Then letting this white reporter know that, look, I'm a football player, but I'm still a black man. In other words, that comment encompasses it all. So when he says I'm responsible to the community that I come from, letting white America know that, look, I'm not in the dark Because when I leave this sports arena, I'm just another black man. You know what I mean? When I get into my lunch, my Mercedes Benz or my Lexus, some racist white cop can pull me over, and I can do everything that he says to do and still wind up like Philando Castile, shot 5 or 6 times, you know what I mean? And I like, and LeBron made kind of the same comment in an article recently. I think it was because LeBron is on the front of GQ magazine. LeBron said the same thing, too. He said, I constantly have to teach my boys, my young boys, you know, LeBron's children are probably going to be never wanting for nothing. They're going to probably have generational wealth. But LeBron said, I still let my young boys know that no matter how rich you are or how much money you get, you're going to still have people in this country that's going to be against you because you're black. You know, LeBron made this, he tried to emphasize it to his children all the time because LeBron, as you know, he got his way. Not that he needed to get one, but LeBron, of course, that was reinforced back in the summertime. Remember Ellen Richard when they printed the nigger slur on his home out there in L.A., remember?
Yeah.
So LeBron realized that. I think that's got, like I said, that's got reinforced with LeBron.
Well, let me say this before I let you go, Joe. The part about Jenkins, you know, maybe people wake up. It's obvious that people wake up at different times,
mm-hmm.
but you know, he's here in Philadelphia, and I don't really see a lot of activity that Malcolm Jenkins is doing. I mean, he can mm-hmm. say that he, you know, that's good to say it, but I'd like to see it a little bit more.
Right.
And plus, I don't hear him speaking out on these issues. And plus, me personally, see, white folks always have a strategy of dividing black folks, divide and conquer, or divide and talk to black people that they want to talk to. Now, mm-hmm. the media showed, when they showed the guys going to this meeting,
mm-hmm.
he was out front. They showed him. So I guess mm-hmm. he was kind of like the point man on this issue when they went to mm-hmm. talk to the commissioner. Number one, if it was me, I wouldn't have talked to the commissioner or nobody else unless Kaepernick was invited to the meeting.
Agreed.
Because they're going to go there. They're going to talk to Malcolm Jenkins about these issues. Malcolm Jenkins didn't start it. He was a Johnny Come Lately.
Mm-hmm.
If it was me, I would have said, listen, you know, okay, you want to invite me to talk to the committee, you know, invite me up there to Manhattan to talk with the board of commissioners for NFL, good. Invite Colin, then we'll all go. If Colin mm-hmm. don't go, we ain't going. Mm-hmm. You know, Colin Kaepernick's like an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have went there because he's not, to me personally, Jenkins ain't talking strongly on these issues. And the white media here kind of love Jenkins. Which lets me know that he's a fence straddler. Anytime you got white folks that kind of like your positions, like you personally, that lets me know that you ain't busting no grapes. Personally.
In Malcolm Jenkins' case, the reason why white folks kind of act like they like him only because the Eagles winning. If the Eagles was losing and stuff like that, which they're going to start going to tank at some point, you'll see all that good shit go out. See, white folks have a way, Ella. You know how they are. When your team is winning, you know, it's like the old saying, Ella, you can have a manager and a player, like back when the Yankees were Jackson, Steve Martin. Yankees was winning World Series. They were, you know, there was a lovable in the clubhouse, but they were still winning championships. So white folks were able to, you know, overlook the fact that Reggie Jackson was getting up in his white man face and vice versa. They didn't care. And that's the same with kind of with parallel with Malcolm Jenkins. As long as the Eagles winning, you know, white people can kind of look the other way. But let them start losing, then all of a sudden, Malcolm Jenkins activism is going to be highlighted. He's a distraction. He this and that. Yeah, yeah, you understand what I'm
saying? Yeah,
you might
be right, Joe.
Yeah, because white folks, I've been around these people so long, that's how they are, man. See, right now, Elliot, you're a black man. I'm a black, Richard, a black man. Let's name a white area in this town. What's the place up in the Northeast called?
Fishtown.
Brysburg.
All right.
Tomorrow, I'm just putting this as an example. I know it won't happen because none of us would do that. But just let's say for the sake of argument, me, you, and Brother Richard tomorrow night went up to a little tavern in Brysburg, which is a blue collar white ethnic town and stuff. Man, if we go in one of them bars tomorrow night, if the Eagles blowing out Washington tomorrow night, those same bigoted white boys who will be calling us the N-word, ready to put a rope around, if the Eagles win, they might buy all three of us a round of beer. They, you know what I mean? Because that's the way white people have been around. Because they happy in that moment. They just as happy. That, you know, we all bleed green and all that stuff, right? But, man, let the Eagles be losing tomorrow night and getting their butt kicked, which could happen tomorrow night. man, all of a sudden we become ends all of a sudden. You know what I mean? Everybody, they can flip the strip on you just like that. So this is why Malcolm Jenkins getting that kind of a good report from the white press to a certain degree. And from some, that's why the white fans haven't really attacked them like they normally would, because the Eagles winning. But like I say, once they start losing, and they will, believe me, all that negativity about his activism is going to be highlighted. Mark my words. You heard it from Brother Joe first.
Thank you for your call, Joe.
Thank you, welcome, Brother Allen and Richard. Y'all take care, my brother.
Right.
Take care.
Before we go to our next call, let me bring back Brother Otis from Newport News. Brother Otis?
Yeah, he brought up an issue, and I want to tell you, I've been through quite a few things in my life, so I tend not to go with the headlines, and I start digging to find out what's going on. You know, the NFL went along with this mess with Trump, trying to get his billionaire donors, the owners who donated to his campaign. He had personal conversations with them about pushing this issue.
I agree.
And I'm going to tell you where it really backfired on him, and I think it's going to come out in a little bit. This lawsuit that Kaepernick has against them, people don't realize that this has been a whole year that Kaepernick was really hung out there by himself until Trump tried to usurp this thing and turn it into disrespecting the flag. So Greg, his lawyer, what's his name? Gregarious?
Okay.
Or something like that. Out of California. That man, we don't know when Kaepernick got him as a lawyer. What we do know is normally lawsuits like this are not just publicly announced. Usually when you get something of this gravity, because he's still an NFL player, just unsigned, unrestricted free agent. The NFL was contacted by them about this pending lawsuit. What has come out now is once they realized they were going to be sued, they finally got with the Players Association, had a meeting with a key player. One of the reasons they did that is because as a public official, the president is actually acting illegal to even be involved in a private citizen's employment. So number one, so that's ethics violation right from the start from the commander in chief. Then on top of that, the collective bargaining agreement is a unique employment agreement in the United States. They have a collusion clause in there, and it doesn't have to be collusion of four or five different people involved. If the NFL colluded, any of their members colluded in any way to ban that man from working, then it dissolves the whole CBA, which is not supposed to run out until 2020. And what has come out is his lawyer made it plain to them. Over the past year, you got a whole bunch of disgruntled employees that left every one of these 32 teams. So they probably have the information. He says he has a smoking gun, and I believe him. A whole year's worth of 32 teams pissing off somebody that was there when they didn't think they were going to be heard. And I'll mute.
Thanks, Brother Otis. Oh, man.
And when it gets down to that money and you know, that legal fight, but, you know, it's just interesting, Brother Otis bring up, because the one thing that I caught on was that the whole question of the, what he called it, the ethical position, because here again, Trump is caught into something, you know? So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Let's go to the star of the show there. Let's go to 646.
Oh, if it isn't my good brothers, Richard and the great Elliot. Brother Richard. Brother Richard, on Sundays, you sound so good, Brother Richard. It sounds as though the daddy has lost your mind on Sunday. You sound relaxed. You sound like you had you some herbal some herbal weed. All of the great things that one must have to take their mind away from the daddy. I'm telling you, man, you sound like a rock star, brother. You know what I mean? Ain't nothing better. But listen, there's two things. Number one, in regards to Kaepernick, I must say, I don't know if there's a smoking gun or not, but I just feel like this, man. It's going to be what it's going to be. I just would like to see somebody from the Dallas Cowboys stand up to Jerry Jones. Until somebody from the Dallas Cowboys stand up to Jerry Jones, I really don't give a damn. I'm totally disgusted by the lack of manhood by the Dallas Cowboys. So I don't really care. You know, because I would figure out of all of the black players on the Cowboys, there has to be at least one who has the fortitude to tell Jerry to kiss my behind. I'm a black man first before I'm a football player. But then again, you know, that's what the deal is. But what I really wanted to say something about was, and I wish I had got on before Brother Joe from Philly had gotten on, so maybe he could have addressed it, is I had heard a little snippet of the minister talking about separation or else. Now, I know I may get into a little trouble, but I got to ask this question. Seriously, brother. When the minister talks about separation or else, I would hope that at some point in time, somebody could clarify, when he says separate, and he's talking about, I guess, separating from the daddy, number one, where are they going to go? And how are they going to be able to sustain themselves from the daddy? Because in all honesty, most of them, I'm under the impression, work for the daddy, housed by the daddy, and basically are dependent on the daddy one way or another for their existence to, you know, basically live in America. Now, it may be different if they live in another country or they're going to be able to set up some sort of independent nation within this country and be able to set new laws and things of that nature, have an army, you know, and all of these things, have their own currency and this and that. You know, I'm just wondering, is this going to be something that will be able to happen when they talk about separation? You know, I'm just really wondering, because, you know, sometimes I see some of these fights that go on Facebook between some of the nationalist brothers and some of the brothers of the Nation of Islam and some of the brothers from the Wireless D set and some of the other Islamic sets. And it really gets confusing to me, honestly, because when it's all said and done, in a lot of ways, we are, you know, somewhat dependent on the daddy for our livelihood in this country and to be able to function in this country, because I don't know of anybody who has separated from the daddy, honestly, that's able to take care of themselves without no form of assistance from the daddy. And if there is anybody, could somebody inform me? Because that may be something I may want to look at and, you know, maybe join. Because, hey, the only way I could see it happening for myself is if I leave the country and maybe go back home to the motherland or something else. But, you know, that's just an idea because, you know, I'm just trying to figure it out. Because, I've been an art listener of the minister for a long time.
Well, let me say something in reference to that, Jay. Because we've had guests on the program that have repatriated back to the continent and have shared with the audience ways that they can do it. And some of them gave their reasons. One guy that I can think of right off the bat is Professor Cambon that was teaching at the university over there. You remember? He was here.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay.
I heard the show.
Now, it's ways that it can be done as individuals. Now, in defense of the mindset, not necessarily in defense of Minister Farrakhan, but in defense of that mindset as far as separation. Me personally, you can look at that two ways. You can look at somebody visibly doing that, like Dr. Kamba did, and I'll use him as an example. Or you can look at people adapting the principles, sort of like Brother Richard, when he was talking about us developing ways where we can start voicing that we don't agree necessarily with the actions of this government. Taking almost like, for lack of a better term, non-aligned positions on what's going on. See, those are ways to start separate. All separation has to start in the mind first. So those are ways that our people can start separating from this man. And it'll be examples for the youth because they might be able to take it to another level. But when you start as a person with a voice, whether it's a black lawmaker, black athlete, or whatever, that people are looking at and start giving independent positions or you don't agree with something this country is doing, that's a form of separating. You're separating from the sheepish mentality. Everybody goes along with what's happening. And especially on this issue, this is an opportunity, especially for black lawmakers, not only because the woman was attacked, but to let black folks know that they don't agree. Listen, you got covert wars, Europeans running all around Africa. They claim that they're chasing ISIS. You don't know, or we don't know, the situation that went on there in Niger. Traditionally, when whites go in these areas with a lot of black folks, you get these white soldiers going there sexually abusing black women. It went on down there when the hurricane happened in Haiti, when the UN went down there and spread all that cholera and all that other stuff down there. So we don't know what went on in that African village because you see all different types of accounts. You might have had men that was in that village that didn't want American soldiers there and took it upon themselves to get them out of there. But, you know, America going to put a spin on it that everything is ISIS.
And you know, the funny thing is that this guy was found miles away and they were talking about his body was so badly mutilated that they couldn't even open up the casket. So there's no telling what happened in regards to that. They said that there wasn't even a count. That's why he was missing. There's so many things in play in regards to this that it's absolutely mind-blowing, man. This is like the Benghazi that they put on Clinton, but this is not going to be dealt with, I don't think, in the same fashion, to be honest with you. I think this is going
to
be...
But it needs to be... Listen, black...
Well, I agree. I totally agree.
They need to start earning their stripes if they're going to consider that. Listen, no other country... Can you imagine if they caught some... just say, for example, some Kenyan soldiers in England with some type of covert operation, no matter what it was. You'd hit the whites here, and we're not even a part of the British Empire, so to speak. You'd have white lawmakers here demanding an explanation to what you're doing there, and we want to see what exactly is going on. You got white folks... or white armies running around African countries claiming they're chasing ISIS. And yeah, listen, 5 years ago, they was chasing Al-Qaeda. Just like I said, yep. Friday, I guess Al-Qaeda then went out of business. There's a business sign on their door because you don't hear nothing about Al-Qaeda anymore. Everything is ISIS. So they're chasing ISIS.
They the new guys, like ISIS is number one, Al-Qaeda is number two, but Al-Qaeda is still... around, so at some point in time they'll bump, you know, Al-Qaeda back up to number one.
Yeah, well, I don't know who number one and two are, but I'm just saying they always use that as a ruse to why they're running around in these African countries with this AFRICOM. Black lawmakers ought to stand up and say, well, wait a minute, what are you doing? But see, no. They don't consider themselves connected with Africa. That's the whole point of some of this conversation we was talking about earlier tonight. It's no connection there.
They don't even have connection to the American Empire, if the truth be told. I honestly don't understand what purpose, and let's be honest, what these CBC members serve to the community? What do they do? I mean, really, what type of legislation are they putting forward to make the lives of black people better? You can take Let me just say one thing. You could take the black colleges and use that as an example to define the CBC. Look at the black colleges, the HBCUs. That would define the CBC, because that right there should be the litmus test to what the CBC is all about, because they should have the HBCUs at the head of their agenda, because those are supposed to be the Negro peens that move the people, your people, forward. Let's keep it real.
Jay, I mean, that's a beautiful policy. As you say, litmus test for them, because I agree with you. I agree. And I was just going to be sarcastic, because from what I hear, and I've never been able to go to one and never really thought I would even ever go to one. They have good parties. From what I'm told, the CBC have every year, and they might have it some in between, they have a good party. And that's what I kind of get. They're the BET of the political class.
And that in itself really plays into a stereotype, because what the heck? What do they got to be partying about? The state of emergency that black people is in.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is this: if you take into consideration that most of them Negroes, like I always talk about, are sorority and fraternity Negroes, right?
Right.
Now, they represent the Greeks. You know, like I always say, you are more into Greek culture than you are into your African culture. You repping Greek before you repping African. So how is it that it doesn't show you what your value system is, because that's where most of your Greek freakiness comes from, is the HBCUs. So you would think if this is where you get in most of your converts from, why would you not sustain that as the bastion of your glory? You know what I mean?
Because you need to then actually work for the constituency base that brought you there.
I agree.
I mean, that's why they don't. I mean, which means that then they would have organized their constituency base to support that institution in order to be able to go to into, because, you know, look at the numbers. Even though they're the numbers, they have to be able to go to the into that congressional hall and lobby for that resource for those black colleges. Now, then it raises the question, well, what do they got to lobby with? Now,
But you know what's even more crazy, to take it even further? Think about this. You know, everybody talks about 45 and how bad 45 is. But do you notice how the Democratic Party has nothing in place to set themselves up to be able to remove this clown from office or be in a position to remove him? You ever notice that? Have you noticed that they have nothing? They have nothing in place to put something to whereas they'll be able to get people elected in the midterms and then thereafter to make sure that the country would be able to get back on an agenda to make things better for the American people after this guy gets finished doing his thing. Because, like I said Friday night, what's about to happen within the next couple of months with this tax reform is absolutely going to wreck havoc and destroy this country? Because I don't know if you've seen where Wall Street is up in arms about what he's talking about doing with the IRAs. They are up in arms.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. He's talking about doing some things with IRAs and 401ks and all of that, man. I mean, it's just at the point to where as now he's going to mess this country up so bad that, you know, whoever gets into office, it's just not gonna get no better. I don't see it getting no better.
But
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and I want to use this, and I think Elliot, you did for me, you know, explain, you know, where this goes back to where you started, Jay, in relationship to raising the question about separation. Because it doesn't matter who says it. The question is, it's not a question whether the strategic intent is a part of a group of American Africans' vision of their future, a vision that, you know, personally I kind of share. No, I don't think that it may happen in totality in my particular lifetime. And the men and women I came up under, they even told me they didn't think that it was going to happen in their particular lifetime. And those are men and women come out of the 20s and 30s. But it's clear when we stay centered in our own history, there's been a segment of us who believe that the only healthy thing for us is to be able to position ourselves in to where the future will be operating as a sovereign people. Now, how that will play out, Elliot, I agree with you. That's what the future children will define. The future statesmen and stateswomen will define. The future leaders will define of the people who represent. Now, all Black people may not take that position. They think they can reform or transform this American project. I think that we have a history, and what comes to my mind when you look at Martin Delaney, or you go back a little further and you look at Paul Cuffey, we have a history of people that said, I don't think, well, you've already said, you're not, this is not for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. That's okay. You know, but you want to keep us anyway. You tell us this is not for us, but you want to keep us anyway. You know, that's
well, would
okay.
You would you give a Negro, would be honest, would you give a Negro up? Would you give the type of Negro up that the white man has created in this country? I mean,
see, that's the beauty of
you know what? Let me just jump in, Richard. Okay. You know, that's always been the debate with white folks. I'm talking about an historical debate to the early periods of this country, because some white folks was looking into the future. 100 years down the line, they knew that it was going to be a problem for them with Black people in this country. Some of them just had a vision of, well, I got people in servitude now. But then others were saying, listen, we can't have these people running around in society. That was one of their biggest debates. You know it,
but
Richard.
Elliot, I know this, but look at what they've done. Look at what they've done. They created the Negro King and the offspring, the mulatto,
which has absolutely
protected them to the point to where either one of them is going to protect this cracker, to the point to where he has nothing to fear. The white man in this country
he's still fearing, though.
On the level that he perpetrates. He has nothing. Why they act the way they do, to me, is absolutely madness. They have nothing to fear. It is no reason for the white man, listen to me, to have a Donald Trump in office to make it seem as though they putting Mexicans and Blacks and other people of color in line because we are supposedly gonna overtake them because of population. Listen, if we were to overtake them in population, we would never hurt the daddy because they got our
Yeah, but Jay,
that's,
it's not.
That's an individual thing. I mean,
yeah.
With their and Ella, you say, I mean, I agree with you. When you really have the sovereign thinking, you're not thinking. What you do today is for 100, 200 years from now. So it ain't about today. I mean, Trump said it at the UN just recently. He said that what we're putting in place in relationship is talking about dealing with 100 years from now. Now he's a spokesperson, not for Donald Trump. He's a spokesperson for the American empire. And the American empire has always been afraid. And it to your point, and Ella, you raised it, when it created what you call the Negro Pen, it was a part of its design.
Yeah.
But what it was afraid of, it was that even though they tried to create some more and more Negro Pens, there was some who was not going to fall for
exactly.
The
program. Exactly.
Those were the ones they have always been afraid of.
And they're still afraid. Because soon as something happens now, where it's even a flicker of consciousness among black people, then here they rally around the troops. Here they come. And when I say they rally the troops, I'm not talking about physical troops. I'm talking about they rally their forces to try to stamp it out. I'm telling you, they always been worried. It's not like they're comfortable and talking about, oh, we're not worried about these people. They always worried. That's why they keep their foot on our neck. They always worried.
And why they worry is there's
no question about that. But the thing is, they got us so psychologically set up in our minds to act and respond in a certain way that they don't even have to do certain things no more. They just go about the business at hand, and Negroes are automatic remote control to act and behave in a certain manner, and we just don't want to admit to it.
I agree. And they don't worry. And I agree, they don't worry about them. But that's not their concern. Their concern is not the ones that actually operate in that remote control manner. Their concern is about the ones that they don't know that is walking around these streets. Now they call streets. Then it was in their plantations. Before it was in their shops that they don't know. Who could be sparking a resistance to the way this operation is going, and that can have an impact because they know they got resistance, as you have said, they got resistance amongst their own that they know they will have to deal with. And that is that small population.
Do you know how deep it is? Think about this. Do you know you got men who are out there homeless, who are hungry, who haven't eaten for days, who are scared to take bread. Now, you know, man, you got to be under some serious, serious mind control when you are hungry and you scared to eat. You scared to be able to steal to eat because somebody got you that scared and petrified to what may have happened. Now, if you go any place else around the world, you don't really see the type of homelessness and poverty that you see here in America, as blatant as it is here. Because
go to Nigeria.
No, you do see it, but it's a little bit different. You don't see people that are in a developed countries like America. Nigeria is not as developed as America is. I'm talking about in developed countries where you have this type of open type of poverty and the type of wealth that I could be on Wall Street and you could see some homeless people at a certain time of night and you got these people walking carefree and something like that and they not getting busted upside the head. Let me tell you something. Let me keep it real. If I was in that position and I was hungry, somebody could bust upside their head. You know what I mean? Because that's that's just the, you gotta, you know, it's like we don't have that type of survival instinct to survive no more. I mean, it's like they're beating it out of us, man. They've really gotten us to a point to where, as in a lot of ways, a lot of black people are scared of their shadow, man. And that's the tragedy of us on a lot of levels as a people, man, that they've been able to do that to us. And I don't even think we see it that way on a lot of levels, man. I just think we think that we're supposed to be in this situation. We think that we're supposed to allow someone like this wing nut that's in the White House get along and do what he's doing, and there's no uprising. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the thing that's got me, like, so surprised, honestly, man. I thought it would be more of a uprising in this country, you know, just based on the simple fact that things are going in the direction that he's going. I thought it would be more of a uprising, him doing what he's doing in the manner in which he's talked to, you know, women in the way that he's treated women. I mean, how could you be so upset about this cracker Harvey Weinstein, but, you know, 45 done did the same thing.
Right.
And just as worse. But there's no uprising about him.
But
that's what's crazy.
And Miss Ann, see, we gotta flip the script here now, because Miss Ann, she's a what they call it, a Merkel kind of being, because on one hand she's always been benefiting as a non citizen in the American project, and yeah. I mean from day one, but she's always been outside it and benefiting. And when we look at these, what they presenting to us now, we got a lot of male patriarchy, abusive behavior within our own culture in relationship to you don't have wealth, but you still feel you have the power to treat women in a certain way. Okay, we got that. But when we look at what they're presenting to us, we're talking about millionaire women or women who want to be millionaires and what they're willing to do. Now, there's some decision process going on here in that relationship.
Well, and because
they're coming up now, a lot of them are coming out of the woodworks now of what done happened to them. And when you look at their bank account, it's a hell of a lot more than what I got in mind.
A lot of them done got paid well, man. I mean, they were talking about this joker paid a couple of women. I don't know if it's one, because I ain't really paid too much attention to it. I don't know if it was a group or whatever, but they said this joker paid 32 mil and signed the contract for 100 mil. They fired him, and, you know, I don't know how much of that 100 mil he got, but think about it. You paying 32 mil for sexual harassment, just take it and put it into context. What the hell did you say and do to a woman?
But my yeah. concern is, looking at her, if I may, for just a second, is that my concern is that that's the ones that went into some deal, as you say, did something. But a lot of them, to get where they are, they let him do that.
Yeah.
That's women and men to get what they came in the door with nothing but what they look like. And all he said was, well, in order to get what you want to get, this is what you got to do.
And imagine how many women that ugly, filthy, stinking white boy had his way with. Oh, just imagine.
Hey, Jay, listen,
because they wanted to get that. Because yeah. they wanted to get what he wanted to do. And you raised a point, because in Sister Soldier book, her first book, the scene that got me, we're talking about black young girls who, when they go to a party and the guy, what they had to do, and she wrote the scene out in order for them to get in the door, what they was willing to do. So this, I mean, yes, we could put it on the culture thing, but we also have to say, make sure, and it may seem, you know, I'm not accepting this. I think we need to make sure we put it in context of, one, the power of Miss Ann, white women who have made the motion picture industry the most pronounced industry in the world. What she's got out of it, what she's got out of being an American with no rights and riding on the coattail of black people to get rights, even up to the day, you know, we have to put that in context. Of course, she ain't, as you say, Ellis, she ain't jumping out there saying, don't treat them like that, or I ain't going to give you, as you say, Jay, I ain't going to give you no nookie.
Yeah, I mean, she'll use a nookie to get what she wants now. Don't never be under the impression that she ain't gonna give you no nookie if she thinks that it's gonna be to her benefit. You know what I mean?
Hey, Jay, let me mention this before I let you go. When you mentioned that you still surprised that you don't hear you know, political voices condemning this guy. You said that, right?
Yes.
Well, one of the reasons, and I'm gonna say this, and then we're gonna move on. One of the reasons that you don't, and we had a caller the other day that usually calls from Philadelphia that echoes the same sentiment. One of the reasons that you don't is because, whether they're Democrat or Republican, when you're talking about white Democrats and Republicans, what he's saying about white privilege and white hegemony, they basically feel the same way. I'm going to build a wall. I want to make this country great again. Anybody else, we're going to wipe them off the face of the earth. And all that type of talk. It might seem silly and crass to a lot of people and it's foolish. But ultimately, he's talking their language. So they're not really going to condemn him. They might not like his approach. A lot of them don't like his approach, but what he's saying, they agree with. So you're not going to hear condemnation to this man by white folks. Right. You're not, no matter what he says or does. They're not.
Well,
because he's basically speaking their language.
Well, hey, listen.
The thing
is
he speaking our language? And if he's not, what we going to do about it?
Well, I'll leave you with this. There's a lot of Negro peeps who agree with him, because they sure feel a great relief when they hear that Mexican Baba Louie is gone. And, hey, listen, man, all I'm going to say is that what's going on in Puerto Rico, if it hasn't shown you what the white man think of you and where we are as a nation and where we're going as a nation, there ain't nothing more I could say, man, because that right there is the litmus test of how you treat a so-called people, man. But listen, to y'all on Friday.
Okay, talk to you, Jay.
All right, now.
Thank you.
And that's where the statement comes into play when he was talking about the initial thing about separation or else. Right. That's where it comes into play. Separation or else. What are we going to do about this? What do we have to say, and what plans are we going to make? And not necessarily, you know, black people in mass running somewhere else, because it doesn't matter if you run somewhere else and have the same mentality.
Right.
The separation first has to come into mind, and what we going to do about it? Start taking non-aligned positions to this foolishness going on. Start speaking out about what's going on that continent where our ancestors came from. Our ancestral homeland. What do we got to say about Europeans running around in all of those countries willy-nilly doing what they're doing? Now, it's obvious that over there, it's bad leadership over there, just like here. They co-opted black leadership there also. That's why you have all this fighting going on in that country.
looting, stealing.
And then people wondering the propaganda that they put out over here is, oh, look at them black people, they doing the same thing. But the thing is, it's this man, the unseen hand going on. It's people over there just like over here. They don't like the corruption of black leadership over there. And they're fighting against it. Well, we need to start doing that here. Instead of being complacent to all these old charlatan black politicians, we need to start fighting or speaking out against them. Let them know that we don't agree with the stuff they're doing. If they agree with it, we don't. Let me grab another call or two. In fact, I should take our final break before we... Let me grab this call. 4444 area code. 44.
Hey, Brother Elegant Richard, man. I think you're going to come to me, man. You know I am. I bring a different perspective, man. You know who it is. This Big West down in ATL. How you brothers doing?
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm still learning, man. Like my man Richard say, I'm learning. I'm 60 years old, and I learn, man. That's why when I come in with information, man. But look here. Y'all remember, since you said something, I'm going to start my sports first, right? Remember my man Dwayne Thomas? Played for the Cowboys. You remember him, don't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he was a real brother. He didn't give a damn. He didn't say nothing to nobody. He stand up for no anthem or nothing, man. Okay? So, right, my man Jay in front of me, you black people, I'm kind of scared, but he's my man Colin Kaepernick. He's from a fraternity in the Greek. Okay? That right there. And my man, let's get the language right. Minister Farrakhan says, separation, I die. Perish. Okay? That's what the message is, i.e., that you telling them right, man. The number one we can do, free your, like George Clinton said, free your mind and your ass will follow. i.e., one way I separate, I quit eating their pork. Put that hog down, Jay, in New York. Put that hog down.
Now, wait a minute.
Put that hog down. How many of y'all Negroes going to be talking about on October 31st, talking about Halloween, trick or treat, huh? And then you coming all up with Christmas. That's the separation of the members are talking about. And then as far as he's talking about American, black America, you know black Americans over here? And all these black people around the world, they love us, man, for what King and them did in the 60s, man. Okay? We are the best-kept slaves on the plantation, right here in America. Okay, look at everybody, fat, sloppy, eating hog, feeling good, celebrating. They got these name brand shoes on, blinging with the rims, singing these rap songs. So look at him. We got to separate, man, from this BS, man. Okay, and Brother Elliot, you know I bring the truth, man. Because each one of us, y'all on this, is considered a black identity extremist. My man, last week told y'all about that, okay? So, like y'all said, they ain't worrying about the 80% cheaper. They scared of this 5% us, the waking one. All right? And Brother Elliot, let me ask you something, man. You and my man Richard, man, there's so much information out there, man. I'm about solution oriented, man. What would you say to this thing about what the minister said, separation or die, man. He said separation or die. I want y'all to elaborate more on that. You see, we already dying anyway. But I love y'all, man. I want to hear y'all talk, man. Elaborate on. Oh, yeah, well, I want the question is, if y'all had a son or daughter, would y'all let them sign up for this man military?
You know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that because I wanted to talk about that this evening. Mm-hmm. But I don't know whether we got time before the program's over, but that's going to be a future topic very soon. Mm-hmm. Just what you said. Wes. Because we got decisions to make. See, and these are some of the things that we've been talking about tonight. Mm-hmm. We got decisions to make as a people. And if we're going to be non-aligned with a lot of this stuff going on, then we got hard decisions to make. Because the way this guy is talking and the way any of these presidents have been talking, at any time, something can break out. And then they'll the first ones whose bell they've been knocking on or whose letter they'll be sending is to our children. It's a school here in Philadelphia, Edison High School. Black school. They lost more, and you can confirm this if I'm right, Richard, because I'm more than, I'm 99% right.
Right.
Edison
right.
High School lost more students in that Vietnam War than any other high school in this nation. And Edison was black. All them students that lost their lives in Vietnam, they come out of Edison. They lost more students come out of Edison High School than any other school in this nation.
And if you had to go, you had any infraction, you had to go to a judge in front of, they would say, well, you got one or two choices. Lock up or go into service.
And they was going into service at alarming rates. And a lot of them wasn't coming home. Or coming home maimed. Or coming home with drug problems.
And now with the economic condition, you know, with the number you spoke to last week, with 45% of the young black males out of work, not working, you either go to jail or go in the military. But that cuts that down because now they're saying, and that's the thing I would just want to, you know, when you talk about the type of force that they're creating, these special force teams, they're highly elite, quote unquote, highly elite teams. You got to, you know, they're saying they got a new kind of warfare going on now. So the soldiers that they're putting on the ground, like what would happen if the guys that went to got bin Laden? Now, they were in definitely breaking a national state boundary going in to take somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that. If they would have got caught, it would have been a big ramifications around it. But they went in and they only knew about it after they accomplished the assignment. Now that's the type of teams they got running around the continent right now. And that's a training in what most cases are not. Talking about ISIS. Because you got to go in the country.
See, these folks, they fund both sides of the group. So ISIS is the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, man. Okay? That's what ISIS is, man. Uh-oh. Another manufactured group, man. Okay? That's real talk, man. I give y'all the information on it, Elliot. Okay? They fund both sides of the wall. They create the wall, and they create the problem, then they create the solution to create the wall. Because the man said, what his name? Albert Pike said, World War III. They're going to make Islam the boogeyman, man. Okay? That's how these fools do. They create, manufacture boogeyman. Look at, y'all look at, what's that movie that came out?
America.
What's it, that Andrew, that fucker was that was from Georgia, was the president. Woodrow Wilson. Alien, what you call that? Death of a Nation.
Oh,
Birth of a Nation. Mm-hmm. Where they made the black man the boogeyman, man. Okay, that's how these devils do. They create the enemy. And like you said, Elliot, last week when we talked, okay, black men are fought in every war these fools have started. Okay, even my man Crispin Adams, he was the first one fought in his revolutionary war being Boston. All the way down when you were talking about the Korean War, Elliot. Okay, these walls is manufactured, man. Okay, and like you said, and like I'm saying, if we do it for black people to learn this warfare, but we bring it to the hood and take care of all people, man. That's the way you want the art of war, okay? Take what the enemy gets you and use it against them. That's the art of war. That's the only reason I've seen somebody in this military to learn these weapons, these military techniques, so we can teach it to our brothers and sisters, like the other brothers we had on that other week, that's willing to go to these police houses or whatever. You got to be able to defend yourself, man. How many of the people that damn deacon in, what's that man in South Carolina? that devil come in there and shoot up the church. And you mean he didn't have none of them deacons of defense back in that man on Bible study on Wednesday? Okay? That's some BS, man. That's what I'm talking about. We got to learn how to defend ourselves. We quit fighting these white folk devils because the war is over here, man. We are all prisoners of war behind enemy lines. We at war, Elliot. This ain't no joke. Like Dr. Francis we playing checkers. The white king
gets
the black king, man.
Wes?
Yes, sir.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You finish up?
Yeah, man. We at war, man. It's all, I guarantee, I wish you see all y'all you study the art of war, man. That's what it's all about. And I wish you bring my man, really pull on your show, man. Let them talk. They are what really is, man. Like this sister.
Wes, thank you as always for your contribution, man.
Yeah.
Take care now.
Yes, sir. I'll let y'all find it whenever. I love y'all, man. Just keep the game. Keep waking up our folk, man. Time for awakening.
Talk to you later.
Appreciate it.
Richard, we got time for one more?
Go ahead now.
All right, let's go to, I think this is New York City. Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Yes, sir. Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, good evening. And it's, my name is Lee, calling from Brooklyn.
Okay. How you doing, Lee?
How you doing now?
I'm fine, thanks. A little stuffy. Good evening to you all, the folks this evening. if I may. I was just thinking that in far as the gentleman who apparently knew what he was getting himself into in inverted commas, my God. Do you think that he could have been targeted by whatever group is being claimed to be a terrorist group over there, which, you know, a lot of these so-called, I don't want, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. In other words, could have been some local group who was fed up with whatever. But anyway, not to digress too much. I mean, in the scheme of things, they see a African coming to kill them. And what would their reaction be? What would their thoughts about this particular person be? You know, in Iraq, for instance, in the first Iraq War, even the second Iraq War, and even in Afghanistan, I heard that black troops were targeted because, you know, if you look at the history of blacks in those areas, especially in the so-called Middle East, you know, they thought it was a bit galling to have a black person come at them as, you know, trying to detain, kill. So they would actually target black soldiers, you know. What do you think of that?
Well, listen, I don't really know what happened over there. And
I understand that. But
no, go ahead.
I'm saying, in terms of a black person representing an oppressive force, do you think he could have been targeted, or any other black soldier for that matter?
Well, I don't necessarily know whether he could have been targeted, because I'm quite sure the ones that attacked them was black folks, because they was in Niger.
Right.
But we don't know the situation, and I don't, and that's where black lawmakers ought to come in. They ought to demand to transparency to know what is going on, what is the United States doing there. You know, they're building drone bases all over Africa. What is the purpose of all this? They claim that all of it is to chase ISIS. It's a little more than that. And plus, when they go into these countries, like we stated before, you know the United States track record in these countries. They did it over there in Iraq. Going over there, you're abusing, when you're raping. Seem like when they go in these places, they can't wait to go into some place where they can take advantage and rape some women. And people ain't going for that.
Well, look at it. Look at it like this. Imagine you're out with your group or your boy, you know, your 10 of you, whatever. And all of a sudden,
we're getting a little interference. That might be on your end, Lee.
Pardon?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let me transition. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine you're going out with a group of friends, for instance, and there's 10 of you or whatever, and you get attacked by a group that's predominantly European. Let's say there's 10 or 12 Europeans, whatever. And in that group of Europeans is one black guy, and he's fighting along with them. Who do you think you're going to go for? You're going to put a beating down on those white men, but when you get to that black man, you're going to put a serious beating on his ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you do have a point.
Right, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's real. It's real. It's the possibility is there. I mean, it's probable. I think it's also raising that question of, like, what other, I know ISIS, but there are local resistance. I don't know if they call it resistance or groups in these areas. So if it's a local group, it'd even be, to your point, it would even be more
they would be more prone to demonstrate their own power over this individual by doing more than they would do on a black on a white person.
Just because they're
black. And because they are representative of the of a nation who supposedly coming in to eradicate them. And they're in their own home. Whether they're just or not, they're in their own home. So to that point, yes, it's the possibility.
You know, when you're talking about nationhood, I would say it was Dr. Wilson, but I don't think it was. But somebody had made an observation. You know, looking when you see in Europe, wherever, where the boats crashes on the beach, and there are lots of, you know, people that are injured of European abstraction, that are injured and dead, and people are crying and weeping and going out there to help and blah, blah, blah. But when you see the same, let's see, you know, some Haitians that are crashed in Miami or wherever in Africa, you know, the reaction is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stems from identifying with a group. You know, you could see your mom, your cousin, your friend, your et cetera, in that group. But you don't see that in the other group. You know, yes, you can have some sort of empathy as a human, but when you see your actual kin, you know, in those situations, you have a deeper feeling about it. So it's the same thing I'm saying in terms of when you see someone over there that looks like you who's trying to kill you for you're already feeling oppressed by that particular group, that is sending someone who is actually you to do the dirty work, and he's doing it with aplomb. Mm-hmm. It's very tricky, but you know, I just think there's a huge element of that in it. And then one more thing I'll say before I go, I think that in this country that you know, we would make strides if there's one word would be eliminated from our vocabulary in terms of speaking with each other, not just kids, but adults do as well. And we don't know what that is. And I say that because somewhere along the line, you know, especially in the music industry, you know, and you probably heard it before, and I can't remember who said it, but somebody decided that, you know, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but I'll just speak frankly, that the words like spics and the words like, you know, kikes and chinks, I hope I'm not getting you in trouble by saying these things, would be eliminated out of any music, except the word, you know, nigger would not be eliminated. That could be used.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, you know, if our children would just stop referring to themselves in that manner and start calling themselves brother or, you know, king or whatever else, can you imagine what immediately start thinking of yourself differently? That would be dangerous.
Right. You're right. You're absolutely right, Lee.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for taking my call, and I'll continue listening to your excellent show. Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, Lee, don't be a stranger. This is the first time you've called. I think I don't recognize your voice, but appreciate you.
I called a long time ago before.
Okay. You know, but, I appreciate your call, man.
Mostly.
Call
thank
again.
Thank you very much. I will. Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Have a good night.
You know, Lee raised a point there, Richard, because, you know, it was stated that whatever incident took place, they retrieved those three white Marines right away.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't retrieve the other guy's body till two days later. And I don't think that they retrieved him. It was brought to either the installation or to other American soldiers by villagers.
Mm-hmm.
So something went on there. Listen, the family needs answers. And black people in general need answers. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
And that's what that congressperson, was that Jackson? That's what she's, that's all. I mean, the media is pushing this. What do you think about what Trump said that you said, what you heard? But what she's, the pieces that I heard, she keeps saying, we want to know the question that you raised. Why did he get left and what happened? That's what she want to know. And see, they're going to hide. They're now shuffling because before they give that out, because it becomes a broader question. Well, how much activity do you have special forces in this country doing what? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Now, I've just heard that they're spending $1 billion between England and America propping up outside of Somalia in relationship to building up this here force. They're not spending money in the country itself to build up the military or the police force to deal with the rebel issues in their in that country. They're creating using AFCOM and the UN force. They're creating their own force, contingency force. So when somebody get captured, you know, as the brother Lee said, you know, then it gets into a whole nother thing, because you're here on the pretense of a couple of different reasons. You ain't even here to support the indigenous people. You're in here to support the American interests.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is always the case.
Right. And that's what Trump is saying in the Trump doctrine of, you know, going alone or America first as a foreign policy doctrine, that we're going at this for our own, on our own. We will accept coalition from European powers or whatever, but if we don't, we got a team to do that. And in that foreign policy doctrine, and is what Jay say as far as that budget issue, we're going to increase the military spending to ensure that we can go it alone. That's globally.
Well, Richard, we come up on the end of another program. Went a little over time, but it's always good to conversate. I love these open forum conversations personally. And just letting the listening audience know, we're starting out a new week, and Monday, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie is on from 10 to 12. From 11 to 1, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, you can catch African Perspectives in the morning from 11 a.m. to 1 in the afternoon. Wednesday, we'll be starting she'll be starting her week, a program. Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock, Sister POC with Revive. That's Wednesday evening from 8 to 10. And also Sundays from 11 to 1. On Wednesday, Us Lifting Us, Black Economic Program, will be on Thursday evenings from 9 to 11. We'll be back on Friday evening from 8 to 10 with Time for an Awakening. On Saturday, two programs. Saturday SST with Troy Wilmore, Saturday morning sports talk with Troy. Brother Troy will be on from 10 to 12, and then from 4 to 6, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then the week starts again with Revive on Sunday morning from 11 to 1, and Time for Awakening at 7 on Sunday evenings. A couple of new programs again starting in November. Let's Buy Black 365.com is going to be starting their program. Also, two other programs that are untitled right now will be starting in November. So the Time for Awakening family is growing. All a part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the largest independent black radio streaming network in the world, is the Black Talk Radio Network. You got a few other black entities. The Empowerment Network is one of them. I don't know what happened in regards to the Empowerment Network. I know they lost some programming. I guess they're still out there. But the Black Talk Radio Network is the largest independent black radio streaming franchise in the world. Time for Awakening is part of that family. And we're doing our part to spread messages among our people worldwide, independent black voices, so we can see what we're up against and what we need, strategies that we need to plan and what we need to do. Brother Richard,
yes,
this is it. So I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said,